This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 14, Practice Under Pressure. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about practicing under pressure, how you do it and still manage to get in all your other technical stuff and stay fair. And some questions have been sent in, one from a coach who's having trouble helping a left-arm seamer. And we talk about the bowling arm circle when it comes to leg spin. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. Doesn't matter what the weather's like, and it doesn't matter who you are or where you are. We're here to help you for the next half an hour or so. The sun happens to be shining here. I'm David Hinchliffe, and it's always a rare joy when we get sun up in the far north of Scotland. But a man joining me on the line where the sun almost always shines on him is the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garros.
Hello, the sun is shining. The Mayors 11 are about to take the field against Cardiff Met University.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, and it looks like a good day, so crack on, Ski.
Fab. Get on with it. Right, okay. Speaking of getting on with it, the third person on this call is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. How are you?
Very good. You were telling me before we started that you're struggling to get a game of cricket on despite the good weather.
Yeah, we're having some good weather, but the timing of the rain's been dreadful. We were supposed to play Saturday, and we got rained off there, and we had a couple of games lined up the week before and a tournament the week before that, and they all keep getting postponed or cancelled, as it were. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we've got a game tomorrow at Winchester College and a game on Saturday at Camford, and we'll get those games on.
Yes, and you've got to stay positive when it comes to weather in the UK. It's always going to rain. If you've got to take your chances when they come, it makes each game that you play all the more important and adds pressure as well. And that's something that I wanted to pick both of your brains about this week. And it was regarding practicing with pressure, which is a mantra that we have often had on the show and also had on the Pitch Vision website. But one of the problems that I've come across in recent times is players who actively don't want to practice under a pressure situation. They feel like it's a waste of their net if they are put under pressure when they're batting or bowling, and they want to sort of do more work on their skills than they do on playing under a situation which is more similar to a match situation. So how do you, and it does make things unfair, obviously, because if you're putting somebody under pressure, then you're going to have, especially batsmen, you're going to have times where a batsman doesn't get as much of a bat as another batsman because they get out in whatever game that you're playing. So how do you balance out those problems of giving players the right amount of volume, giving the right amount of fairness between batsmen and bowlers, and still managing to put real pressure on players when you're working on that in practice?
I think that comes down to your programming, really. And also, it's important to include within your program what the athletes want as well. And by doing a bit of a survey at the beginning of the year, maybe on a Survey Monkey or something, or just getting the team together and having a bit of a chat about how you want to introduce pressure training into your program for the summer, you'll probably get a feel for where they are. And also, you'll have an idea of where you want to take it. And the starting point is them, and you can move it forward to where you want to take it over time. But say if you've got two practice sessions a week, or maybe even one practice session a week, maybe a sort of quota of two just normal net sessions where people are getting that volume, to one practice session over where you're out doing some pressure stuff over the week. over the 3 weeks would be a good way of doing it, really. So I'd say a 1-3 sort of ratio to start off with, and then you'll get people buying into it because they'll see the correlation between that practice and their performance at the week, and then all of a sudden you might be able to shift it to 2-1, but two pressure sessions to one just normal hit. So that would be my view. But you've got to always take the group into consideration and some of the outliers maybe into consideration, because what you want to do is build it over the course of a season.
That's true, Gareth. Lever's one of the things I've noticed working with a wide range of abilities and skills of players and players with different ambitions for what they want out of their cricket. You get a broad range of what they want to do at practice as well. So you, at the same session, you might have two or three guys who are really super focused on adding pressure to their game, and then maybe you've got seven or eight guys who really just want to have their bat and then go home. So that's a tough balance to find, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky because you're, especially in club cricket, you're going to have guys of different kind of mentalities and people with different personal objectives. And I guess in the group environment, you've got to go back to what your group objectives were and how you've agreed that you want to set things up as a team and as a group and what you're trying to achieve. And those personal objectives, where there are going to be discrepancies between some people who really want to make sure that everything is as challenging as possible and where others want to just to make it enjoyable, finding the balance between them. And as Gareth said, maybe just saying that 1-2 or 1-3 or 1-4 sessions is going to be very challenging, whereas other sessions are going to be a little bit more relaxed. That's maybe a way you can go about it. But I think a lot of this stuff has to come down to your group goal setting. There'll be goals you set at the start of the year. There'll be goals you set as you think about your training training planning. And there'll be goals you'll set at the start of the season, throughout a season. So they're constantly reevaluating these type of goals. But if we have a top line that we're looking to work towards, and that's something that the whole team's kind of invested in, then as discussions do develop throughout the season and you get to planning different sessions, you can always revert back to that top line and say, hold on, this is what we've agreed as a team. This is one of our objectives that we're not going to be moving on until this time next year again. So we've set one objective for the year. Let's be aware that when we do have these discussions as the season is ongoing, that this is what they're all working towards and this is what we're trying to achieve. So yes, I know there might be different personal opinions, but we've agreed on this top line goal and that's what we're working for.
And let's just finish up maybe very quickly with just some simple ways that, you know, players who are listening in particular, or coaches, of course, simple ways that you can take a normal net situation and add a little bit more pressure. I mean, the headline one is to say to the batsman, OK, if you're out, you're out in this one. That's the real big one. But is there any others that you've got that can help out?
Well, one is to get them to commit to what their focus is on in that session. So they write that down, they stick it down on maybe a whiteboard that you have there, or write it on somewhere where everybody can see what their intention is, and then they have to live by that intention or do their best to live to that intention. And that's a pressure, because the easiest thing to do in a net is to just go in and have a hit and see what happens. But if you go in there saying, right, today I'm looking to be busy at the crease, or I'm looking to take the spinners downtown, or whatever the case may be, then all of a sudden you're putting yourself under that bit of pressure and having a focus for your session that you're walking into.
The good thing about that as well is you're clearly working towards something that you're trying to achieve, and you want to go right rather than having an outcome that's based on something going wrong. So having a clear focus of what you are achieving rather than what you're trying to avoid is a good way for them to be thinking about their kind of motivation.
Yeah, it classic one, isn't it? What are you working on? I don't want to get out. That's your classic one, isn't it? Which is, you know, when you think about it, that's a fairly sensible reply, really, isn't it? Because why would you work on anything else? But yeah, you could be a little bit more detailed than that. It would be helpful. We've got quite a long question in the question section this week, so let's quickly move on to the yes-no round, which is three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. And then once we've done that, we'll get into the questions. I've got the yes-no question, so let's fire away. Question one. Setting default fields is as big a mistake as following the ball.
No.
No.
Second question. Having a hit is like spinning the wheels.
Yes.
Third question. When batsmen improvise, bowlers usually come out on top.
No.
Time now for the questions section. That is where we get questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show or readers to the Pitch Vision website, and we do our very best to answer them. The best question of the week also wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by heading over there. And if you want to send in your question for a future show, then you can email coach@pitchvision.com, or we'll give you more details on how to get in touch with us at the end of the show. So first question is a long one, so settle down. It's from Joe. And Joe is a coach, and he says, one of the players I coach is a batting all-rounder whose batting has really taken off, but his bowling has taken a back seat. He wants to bowl more, as he did in his junior games, to enjoy the game more. His bowling is left-arm medium. He's a strong lad, about 6'4", pretty sharp, bowls a nice length. His weakness, like many young quicks, is lateral flexion and his wrist position outside the line. These faults cause him to push the ball across the right-handed batsman, losing pace, and he has no chance of swinging the ball. I've helped him with the usual drills to fix the faults, intervention poles, resistance bands, and he's made some improvements. However, as batting is his focus, he doesn't want to take too long away from his batting training, so he's looking for a quick fix. So my solution is to get him to bowl round the wicket. The theory is a lefty bowling over to a right-handed batsman can try and get out of the danger zone. All of those angles are very difficult to work against when trying to achieve our preferred action. Whereas when he bowls round the wicket to the right-handed batsman, those angles help achieve the desired outcome and he's starting to bend it back in, which is an indication to me that the wrist position has improved. My suggestion to him is to stick with it for a season or two, giving him time to groove the action, and if he wishes to start, to come back over the wicket and bending it back. So my question, after all that, my question is, are there any negative outcomes from running on this?
Well, I think it's an idea. It's not one that I've seen. I've seen it have people have a go at it. It's not one that I've seen work particularly, but that I don't think necessarily is down to what you're asking him to do. I think it's about how we check and challenge whether actually there is any benefit to him or not. I mean, the crucial thing is that he's got to be safe, isn't he? With that side lateral flexion in evidence, he's obviously going to put himself at more of an injury risk than if he didn't have that side flexion. We know that through all the research and development that's been done all around the world, that lateral flexion is the biggest indicator that there could be a back injury in the happening or in the making. So, you know, it's crucial that we get out of that. And it's great that you've tried all the conventional methods.
And that's when we say lateral flexion, for those who are not familiar with the term, we're talking about falling away.
Yeah, we are.
And in the old-fashioned term.
Absolutely. Yeah. But falling away, and so at point of release or just before point of release, when the peak force is the most significant after that front foot has landed, that we see a curvature in the back. So if somebody was bowling with maybe a base layer on, that you would see where their back is curving off towards the away to the side there, and that's not going to be a good thing for backs, because the forces that are going through the skeleton at that point are, you know, between 5 and 8 times the body weight, which is pretty significant. So yeah, we want to try and get out of that. You've tried the conventional methods. This method isn't a bad one, but what I would say to you, rather than waiting 2 years to make your assessment on whether actually it's having any positive impact, every now and again, probably in practice, get the bowler, after they've done a load of around the wicket left arm stuff, to go left arm over the wicket and see if there's any positive crossover between what they've been trying to do from around the wicket into their action on the other side as well, because that will be the indicator of whether any permanent change for the better is occurring. So from a back, I would suggest get a video from left arm round, rather, and get a video from left arm over, and see if there's any positive correlation between their ability to stand up at the crease, fold over the hips rather than folding over the side, and I'd go from there. So I'm not saying it won't work, because I've seen people try it before. I don't think the monitoring of it has been particularly good, because we want to be having pretty regular updates on whether it's having a positive effect on the overall action, and we're not just treating the symptom, which it sounds as if a lot of people have done in the past with this particular method.
Yeah, it's interesting that I think often people, when people come up with a new idea, they get a bit nervous that it has to work, or it's been a complete failure. And that's not true. If it doesn't work as planned, and as you say, Gary, as you review it, you know, within a reasonable time scale, then you know, you can cross something off your list as an option that hasn't worked, rather than saying, well, that was a failure. The bowler's obviously useless. The coach obviously hasn't got a clue. Everything is stupid, which, you know, is a people do have a fear of that, you know. So it's good to be able to say, well, you know, look, we're trying something here. It's a good theory. Let's see if the theory is true in reality. And if it isn't, we'll cross it off the list as an option. We'll try something else.
You're absolutely right. And I think we don't do that enough as coaches, really, because even if we've got some sound methodology that's stood up over the test of time, that's been passed down from one coach to another, it might not be applicable for that player that you're working with. So again, that check and challenge is there, A, to see if a player is going to progress using the method, but also a check and challenge to ourselves as well, because we can put a full stop on it, can't we, and then go to another method if we've got that check and challenge. So I'm a big fan of that. The other thing I think will be really valuable for this player, and will actually aid his batting as well, is a continual development of leg strength and torso strength, because that will have a positive effect on being able to withstand the forces and be able to stand up at the crease when he bowls, but also are going to help him when he bats as well. So I would suggest doing loads of work around leg strength and torso strength would be hugely beneficial.
Lavers, have you got any alternative ideas?
Well, one of the ideas I'd have is that you're obviously looking for advice, and you've tried a few things, and you're crossing off a few things, and it sounds like you're maybe settling into an idea which may be the kind of the final idea you've got for now. And I would say just use your network as much as you can of coaches that you can contact. So great that you're sending a message to us, but also if you've got any footage, or if you've got any information, send it out to other people you know as well. So get as many people with as many ideas as you can, so again you can start ticking off different ideas, and you're not standing still. And rather than committing to 2 years of, or two seasons of, let's just give it a go and see what happens, in that time you can still be trying some other things along the way, and seeing if there are other ideas out there. I mean, from a technical point of view, you've talked a little bit about, you've tried some work against resistance band, so that's obviously a physical type thing rather than making a big technical change. Presumably you've looked at the obvious kind of alignment with your intervention poles. The other thing that's a really big contributor towards lateral flexion is the synchronization of the upper body with lower body. So just have a look at when your upper body and your front arm's working. If that's either pulling or driving down prior to front foot landing, then that can have a big impact on lateral flexion and someone falling away. So make sure you've crossed that one off your list as well. But use that network of coaches around that you've got, and try and speak to other people who've had similar instances, or maybe you've just had thoughts about it and different theories, and see if they can come up with something. I'd also say, obviously his focus is batting, but in terms of a batting timeline, he's probably not going to be hitting balls 12 months of the year. And if his bowling is taking a back seat, there's probably opportunities where it can take that front seat again when he wants to have a little bit of time away from his batting. So don't completely commit to kind of two years without any alterations, when you can probably find some little times. And even if it's maybe 4 weeks or 6 weeks when the batting takes a back seat and he's just having a little bit of time out, then use that opportunity to try some new things, or to really have another go at the physical development side of things, and hopefully you'll find something starts to progress. By the sound of it, at his age, he's probably still going to be growing a bit, and he's probably going to be changing shape. And as Gareth says, if you put him into some pretty regular, consistent strength work with lower body and torso stuff, then you'll find that not only is he hopefully going to start to be able to resist some of these movements a little bit, but also he is going to change shape a little bit. And as people change shape, their jumping is going to change, his flexion is going to change, and his general movement patterns are going to change a little bit as well. So don't be surprised if things do start to change without a great deal going on, and just try and track that as you go along. So keep it going in the background. Keep your eye on how his technique's changing and how much he is having that lateral flexion, because just as he develops as a kind of physical person, you might find that those things do change, possibly for the good, but also equally it could go the other way as well. So keep track of it as much as you can.
Just one little addition for me on the resistance bands is that whilst, yes, there is a good physical crossover, from a technical perspective, they're really useful for lateral flexion. So if you run alongside the bowler and pull the resistance bands in the direction that the lateral flexion is happening, then we tend to get an adaptation from the body that wants to pull back upright or more upright in order to resist that pull that comes from a coach and from the resistance band. So that's a really good one. And then the other way of doing it is to stand behind with the resistance bands as well. And again, the bowler will run up and will force against the resistance bands. And often that adaptation helps to self-correct that problem rather than this getting too overly caught up in technique.
And you can sneak those kind of things, Gareth, into the warm-up, can't you? Well, you know, we'll do a bit of this, we'll do a bit of that. And okay, let's grab a couple of guys over here with the resistance bands to do some bowling. And then suddenly, you know, you've done 25 reps, you know, with the resistance bands, and then you get on with the rest of your day, and you haven't even realised that you've snuck a little bit in there. It's just part of the warm-up.
Yeah, subconscious of all of that stuff going in, mate, and never underestimate that, that type of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, so that's a great one. Okay, let's move on to the next question from Dan. And I think this one is particularly directed to you, Gareth, but we'll try and chip in as always. Dan says, I've heard you talk about the bowling arm circle with leg spinners and how Terry Jenner encouraged Shane Warne to incorporate it into his bowling. However, I don't actually understand the purpose of it. I'm hoping you can help me understand what spin bowlers achieve from using it. So let's go back to first principles. Bowling arm circle for spinners. Gareth, is this something you brought up in the past?
Really good question, Dan. Thank you for that. In terms of the bowling arm circle, if you can imagine that your bowling arm is like a wheel of a bicycle. Okay, so on the edge of the tyre, you've got the ball in your hand. And ideally, you want that bicycle wheel to drive down in the same line as you want the ball to go down. And often we see spin bowlers pulling their arm in across their body to then go out and then come back in again before they release. And a bit like when we throw, exactly the same principle. If our bicycle wheel is on a sort of funny angle, then we've got to get our release point absolutely right in order to get the desired outcome of the ball landing on a length and spinning away. And obviously that's not going to happen very often because we've got to get it optimally releasing to get that absolutely spot on. Whereas if our bicycle wheel and the bowling arm circle is going towards the target that we're looking to bowl into, then we're going to have a much more consistent outcome release, and more of the spin, the revolutions can be applied into making the ball break off a wicket rather than being in a directional way by getting that optimal release. So, I mean, bowling circle or the bicycle wheel are the two analogies that I use, and Terry Jenner uses, and Ian Salisbury uses, and people that know a lot more about spin bowling than myself. But I find it's a really simple analogy to get that across. So we want to get that bowling arm circle going towards the intended target as early as possible. So it's a nice simple movement straight over the top and releasing and going in the direction of the intended target.
And how universal is that in terms of, are there bowlers who have had success who haven't quite been able to do that?
Yeah, there's been a few actually that have done it. So Murali wouldn't necessarily have been somebody who had a bowling circle that started early because everything was in, and obviously there was some, you know, challenges around his elbow and all of that sort of stuff, which may have impacted upon that. But so he's a prime example of it. But you look at like somebody like a Nathan Lyon bowling nowadays. You look at a Moeen Ali. You look at the Pakistani leg spinner. They're all having really early, well, not really early, but their bowling circle and all their bicycle wheel is being directed towards the target. It just means that there's less to go wrong, because as soon as we have to introduce movement to get something back online, then our consistency is likely to be affected. But more importantly, from a spin bowler's point of view, all of our energies can be directed towards a target. And if we're directing our energies towards a target, then our fingers or wrist, depending on what type of bowler we are, can be really focused on making that ball fizz through the air rather than being something that has to direct the ball into a space.
So that brings the wider question, Lavers, of when you look at something that you've heard about and when you look at it, bringing it into your own game, and you get players who are tinkerers and will try things just for the sake of trying them, and you get other guys who would take a month of Sundays to convince them to make any changes at all. So if you're a player or a coach of a player, how do you assess that? You've heard something might be good, you think it might improve your game, but you don't know whether you need it or not. How do you go about sort of making that assessment and then trying it if you go that way?
Yeah, it's a pretty tricky one. Obviously, as you mentioned, some people are very happy to do that all the time, and they'll be tinkering before a match on a match day, and others wouldn't even be too keen to be playing around with things kind of in the middle of December if they're planning for an English season. So, you've got to work with individuals on it. But in terms of that, I guess you're kind of looking, what are the benefits? Do we understand the potential benefits that this can bring? So it's going to direct, or potentially it's going to direct your alignment and hence your kind of body weight and momentum a little bit straighter of the ball, and it's going to mean that the power being generated is a bit more specific and focused towards the direction you want the ball to go. And as long as we understand that, and we feel like that we're wanting to improve, which isn't an assumption we should always make, because some people are very happy with the way they're performing and they may feel that actually improvement isn't something that they're looking to do. They're quite happy doing what they're doing and having a degree of success that is suitable for what they're trying to achieve. So I think it's got to be a player-led thing again, but the coach is there to try and explain the potential positives, make it clear that you can see where they are now and where they could be if they can get out the other side of this potential adjustment. And then the player's there to make a decision based on what they feel they want to do. And if they don't want to progress or change things to the degree that the coach is suggesting, given the risk and the reward involved in it, and players are always going to see that there is a little bit of risk in change, yet there's always a bit of reward in change as well. So weigh up that little risk-reward balance, and I guess the coach's side of it is just trying to educate on what the risks and the rewards are, and then hopefully it becomes a bit of a joint decision. But obviously you still want it to be player led, because ultimately it's their action, it's their career, or it's their social time that we're playing around with here.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. We are finishing up here. Before we go, we just need to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. And we had Joe's question about a left armer he's working with, and Dan's question about leg spin bowling circles. Which one did you prefer this week, Aris?
I'm going to go with Joe's question this week. I thought great detail and a really alternative approach that he's taken. And hopefully a couple of checks and challenges, a bit of strength and conditioning, and maybe a bit more work on the resistance bands, and your bowler will be there.
Always like a little bit of creativity on this show. And if someone was listening to the show, Gareth, and they wanted to get in touch with us, have their question answered and even win that prize, how would they give us a call or drop us an email?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
Excellent performance, Gary. You got a round of applause. Well done.
They're very loyal here at Millfield.
And you can also get us on social media, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, @pitchvisionacad on Twitter. You can listen to the show every week as well if you just head over to your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Click on subscribe. It comes out every Friday for free. And if you want to get all the show notes and stream the show over the interweb, you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.